Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the zero emission future we all hope for. Every week I'm joined by a wonderful member of the EV Cafe, and this week is no exception. I've got the lovely John Curtis. Welcome, John.
Aww. Do you know what? He is lovely, isn't he? Bless his little heart. Love him, hug him, squeeze him.
And... do you know what? The important bit, though, John, is that we get to talk to the innovators, pioneers and collaborators in our industry and wonderful people like Stuart Middleton that only come along once in a while. And he's here today. Fantastic. Welcome, Stuart.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Thank you for having me on the show.
Hey, listen.
That's very kind of words from you for you there, Paul, by the way. I don't think anyone's been so kind to me.
Whatever.
Not really.
This could be an interesting podcast. Oh,
we better hug him, squeeze it. Well, we'll reach around and give him a big old hug. So Stuart, you are now the managing director of Interval, which is a brilliant recruitment consultancy. I've never been a fan of recruitment consultants. Never really. I've always found them very irritating.
You're probably not the only one.
No, I know. But I have had – I've never directly worked with you, but I know a lot of people that have and rate you guys extremely highly. And I'd – you know, to get to where you are today, it kind of says to me that, you know, there's been a journey that has brought about that commitment. Talk to me about the Stuart – that was like when you were in school, what were you inspired to do? What were you aspiring for in life? How did all of that world sort of come about? How was Stuart formed?
Yeah, wow. Okay. So I think, you know, school for me was an interesting experience. You know, I think like many people, it's something that we have good times and we have our bad times. And, for me, I didn't conform, or I always felt like I didn't conform to the usual way of working at school. You know, I think if I look at my latter years of school, obviously I stayed on after GCSEs and did my A levels, and whilst that was all good, and you know, it was a great thing to do. For me, it never felt like it was my place, if that makes sense. So, and I was kind of, I wouldn't say pushed there, but I was kind of guided there by my parents. So, you know, they had their best interests in mind, and I respect them for that. But for me, I got to the end of my sixth form and A level years, and I think at that point, I knew at the start that I wasn't going to be going on to further education, to university. And if I had gone, I probably would have gone for all the wrong reasons. I was playing a lot of rugby at the time, so the idea of going to university and just playing rugby for university and the socials was the draw, and it was the only draw, for all the wrong reasons. So I decided at that point that, look, I probably won't be carrying on, but I remember having that conversation with my parents, and once again having their best interests in mind. They kind of said to me, well, if you're not going to go to university, then you have to do something respectful. You've got to go and you've got to make something of the world, sure. Come on. So I decided at that point to join the armed forces. As I said, I was playing a lot of rugby at the time. I was a lot fitter than what I am now. And my dad very quickly whisked me off and took me down the local careers centre in Luton. And I remember walking in there, and there was this massive guy who opened the door, bigger than me, and I was like, wow, this is rather intimidating, but. I suppose being an 18-year-old lad, you know, you're full of testosterone and you know, kind of you think a lot of yourself. And then I remember walking in, he said to me, you want to join the armed forces, do you, boy? And I said, yeah. yeah, I think so. He said, well, who do you want to join? Is it the army? Is it the navy? Is it the RAF? And I just said, I remember saying, who's the toughest? And he said, well, and he said the Marines. And I went, well, sign me up then. Let's have a go. And he sat me down on this sofa, and he showed me this kind of introduction to the Royal Marines video. And there was guys jumping out of planes, abseiling down walls on speedboats, and climbing mountains, and all that good stuff. And for me, that was like, right, this is me. This that I want that action man life. obviously, I never did it to kind of become a soldier, I suppose. At the time, it was, for me, it was the challenge and how they kind of built it up with the percentages of how many people do pass versus how many don't. And for me, that was all that I needed to kind of focus and have that purpose to go, right, that's what I'm going to follow. And from there, I signed up. Unfortunately, I had a setback not long before I was due to join, actually, from the training and getting fit. I actually tore my meniscus in my knee and had to have surgery, which then resulted in they wouldn't accept me for 12 months to after the surgery. So then that kind of put me back quite a lot, which was rather disappointing. But hey, you just got, I stuck at it and got through it, got fit again, and then joined basic training, which was probably still today. If anybody asked me kind of what was your best job or what was your best experience, to me, Royal Marine basic training set the tone for everything else in my career. You know, you are thrown into the lion's den day one. Effectively, you get your date to join. You have a list of things you got to pack, and you got to go suited and booted, and you go on this. I had to go from Leighton Buzz, where I live, into London, down to Paddington, all the way to the Royal Marine training camp in Limston, Devon, and they. You get off this rickety old train that takes you right into camp. It's like something from like World War One, and you have suddenly there's this drill sergeant literally just standing there, and he's lined you all up, and it's literally like the shock of capture. You are thrown into it immediately, and you have to stand there, like, and they're already starting to kind of, you know, kind of get quite loud and intimidate you, and it's all there for that kind of shock of capture anyway, and that's where the journey really started. And for me, then, obviously, completed basic training. Once again, I always had a problem with my knee from previous. So I, for anyone who doesn't know, it's a 32-week-long training course. It results in the last week of the training. You have to do 4 commando tests, which are really rigorous training assessments physically. And on the second to last test, because it's 4 tests over 4 days, I ruptured my anterior ligament in my knee. So I was part of my original troop. I think we started with 64 and we got down to 12 originals. So I was one of the 12 originals.
Wow.
Then ruptured my ligament, had to have surgery again. This one was more of an attachment of a ligament back to the bone, because I fully pulled it off. And they put me in what they call hunter troop, which is basically a rehab troop. And that's hard going, because you lose the original guys, you lose everything, you know, all the credibility you built with your training team at the time. And it takes a lot then to kind of really motivate yourself, especially at that end of training. I'd got to the lot, like, that was my last thing. If I'd have done those tests, that would have been the moment of, there's your green beret, pat on the back, you're part of the boys club now. So from there, I obviously had my surgery, got fit, managed to get back into training again, complete the last test, and then passed out with something called the King's Badge Award, which was an award for the best recruit, all-round recruit in training, which is, once again, it's one of my biggest achievements for me at the time, because it's the pinnacle of what you're trying to achieve. And then from there, served 5 years in the Royal Marines, did tours of Afghanistan, went out to Norway, did all mountain training and specialist training as well. And yeah, as I said, I think, you know, the military for me was one of the best things that I ever did, because it enabled me to, there's so much structure in the way that I operate. There's a high sense of professionalism in the way that you operate, and expectations, especially in the Royal Marines. There was an ego that you had to have, and it was, you know, professionalism is number one, and look after each other. And I carry that all throughout. I was subject to some amazing leaders in that time, people who kind of captains and majors who really inspired me. But I did 5 years and then decided to kind of throw the towel in, mainly because at the time I never set out to be a career soldier. For me, it was the challenge. So the challenge had been completed by that point. And I was still young, and I thought, look, it was that kind of time in your life where you go, right, do I stay? Or do I go? Because if I stay, I've got to stay then for probably a significant period of time, at least another kind of 7 years to get my half pension service. But I decided to leave, and then fell into the world of security. It was the obvious route at the time. I was doing I did a bit of close protection work, a bit of anti-piracy. I then fell into more of the operational management. I was in charge of about 130 security operatives around the UK. And then, but I wasn't fulfilled in that really. And I wanted to find a career that would almost reward financially for putting in more work, because I've always been somebody who's worked really hard. You know, that's hard work has never been a problem for me. I think it's probably one of my biggest strengths is, you know, in areas where I lack, I always pick up through just hard work and determination, just getting on with stuff and getting stuff done. So, that which motivated me to kind of get into more of a sales environment, a more of a commission-based type of career. And that's where I fell into recruitment. Like, I think a lot of people who work in recruitment do, you fall in it, you know, you don't find recruitment, it finds you. And that's where the story started. So then I worked for a company for 5.5 years. During that time, stayed with that one company. They're a great company. They taught me everything I knew around recruitment. And then during COVID, that was that sliding door moment where I thought to myself, do you know what? I fancy doing this on my own. It was a bit of a risky time, obviously, during COVID. The world was in tatters. My wife had just given birth to our second boy. So that didn't go down well when I told her that I was going to be leaving my job during a global meltdown. And started Interval. And here we are 3 years later, almost to the date, with a fantastic team around us with great values really, really enjoying life.
So Stuart, you know what, the thing that stands out for me in all of that is that there was a careers center in Luton. Who knew there was actually a careers center in Luton? I didn't know people went to Luton to find a career. On a serious note, there was a few things there. And this is Stuart knows this, but it's quite close to my heart, Stuart's journey at the minute, because my son is the same mindset, wants the challenge. I'm not sure he wants to be a soldier, but he definitely wants to be a Marine, and he's training with I think somebody, Stuart, that you've served with. He's sort of training him and giving him all of that insight. My sense is, because you know, I think he can be a bit injury prone, that he's going to have to dig deep, you know, at some point in that, you know, in that 64 to 12, and then maybe 12 to hunter or huntsman, hunter, which one
hunter,
was it?
Hunter.
Yeah. Into the hunter sort of squad. And I wonder in that moment, because there must have been something that said to you, I am not giving in. Because everything in you must have felt so, I mean, that would have absolutely crushed my mind. It really would have. What was it that anchored you in that moment? What was it that got you to do another 6 months of rehab and, you know, prep and training, and then to graduate with the King's Badge?
Yeah, I think, firstly, I think, when that happened, it was the first time that I've ever called my mum up and cried down the phone to her. I said, "Mum, it's over. You know, this has happened." And because I think it was my second injury, it kind of upped the ante a little bit as well. And I knew how hard it was to recover from the first one, and I knew what was ahead of me at the time. Although it was only a small period of time that I had to get through, I knew the physical test that I was going to have to put this knee through again. But I think there is a certain mindset that you have to do these things. I don't know what it is. I don't know where it comes from, but you've got to want something. And you're doing it. For me, it was, I felt like I had to prove it. I'd said to everybody at that point that I was going to do it. I was determined I was going to do it. So I think there's a mixture of that kind of inner fire that I had, and also the kind of feeling that I had to do this for everyone else that kind of was waiting for me to do it. And I just wasn't going to fail. And I think I've always kind of done that. And if I look back at everything I've ever done, I mentioned it earlier on, you don't have to be the best at everything. You don't. And for me, you know, getting the King's Badge Award, and if I look back now, I was never the fastest runner. I was never the fittest person. I was never the strongest. I was never the best soldier or the best person who could use a weapon or leader. But I think that if you try hard in every element you do and give it your best, success is going to come in one form or another. And for me, that was the kind of, I suppose, the epitome of just putting in 100% all the time and being proud of what you do. And I think that people should remember that you don't always have to be the number one, but as long as you're giving it your best, good things come to those people.
So a former colleague of mine said, the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that, isn't it?
I think, and people, it's interesting, lucky. We talk about lucky here at work, and I think that you do create your own luck. If you're willing to kind of go out there and put yourself out there and network, it's, you know, in the commercial world, and speak to people and listen to people and take advice and criticism, then good things come, right?
Absolutely.
So good things come, and you started Interval during COVID. Tell us, Interval has an unusual spelling, an unusual graphic. Where did the name come from, and why do you do it that way?
I knew you were going to say that, John. I knew you were going to say that.
It's a great question.
Well, fortunately, I'm prepared. When I was kind of trying to think up a name, I think it's for anyone who started a business, you can get really wrapped up in what we're going to call ourselves, how we're going to do things. And for me, I was more focused on where we want to be as opposed to what we're going to call ourselves. So my friend is a designer, and we started kind of throwing some names around. And I said I wanted something that was going to stand out, but not look like a recruitment company from the outset, make people question it. So he played around with a few words, and we came up with Interval. And Interval was effectively the period of time that we're in right now. Okay, it's the interval in time between the old and the new. The carbon world and the non-carbon world. So effectively, that for me is where we kind of sat. So it's not an obvious thing, but that's something that is important to us. The reason why we dropped the A on the logo was purely to make it stand out. It was quite the on-trend thing to do at the time. And to be honest with you, I would love to be able to give you some kind of really fancy answer to that, guys. But I really can't. And that is as simple as it was. And we sat in the bedroom and went, right, let's just go with it. And then let's move on and focus on actually building a business.
And you're absolutely right, aren't you? Because what you're really good at is the people thing. So what you call it really doesn't matter. Your superpower is people. And it strikes me as a real contradiction that you've got somebody who worked, trained, learned to be the professional killer, if you like, who becomes this gentle, caring, incredibly empathetic human being who just wants to deliver for everybody else, for other people. It's not about Stuart Middleton. It is always about the companies you work with and the individual candidates that you work with. Where's that come from, that gentle, soft, the big bear kind of guy?
Yeah. No, look, you know, I'm a 6'4" guy. And even we have feelings, you know.
Not true. That's rubbish.
I think it comes down to personality, okay? You can have all the training in the world and go in a certain direction, but it comes down to who you are as a person. So I've always been somebody who likes to be friends with people. I like to be liked. Sometimes that can go against you because, you know, I'm not saying people take advantage of that, but, you know, making them tough decisions in business can be hard when you don't want to let people down. But I think that emotional intelligence has been something which I've always kind of had, and I think, you know, some people do have that and some people don't, but just the ability, you know, I like to be liked by people. I like to help people out, and I like working hard. So I think that if you can combine all that, recruitment actually is a really, really good kind of thing for me, because it means I get to speak to lots of people. If, you know, and it's quite cliche, but you are changing people's lives. Changing jobs is one of the biggest things that you can do in your life, and it affects a lot of things. So I think that, you know, if you combine kind of who you are and try and find a career that fits that, then here we are. Mm-hmm.
And all of that seems to make sense, right? You know, I get from obviously having now spoken with a few Marines and kind of gone on the journey with JJ a little bit to kind of build that picture. You are very tight with one another. You have to have each other's back. There has to be an element of emotional intelligence, because that's part of what drives you guys as a team, right? To overcome, to be the best, to look after each other, to have each other's back, that type of thing. And so that kind of naturally follows through. But I suppose the question for me then was this whole world of decarbonisation, the going green bit, and you've taken a slightly different slant on serving that sector of the market by ensuring. Why is it that sector of the market that stood out for you? Why is it the green tech element?
Yeah, look, I have to be honest with you. When I started my recruitment career, I was working for an IT technology business. And if you go back, kind of like I've been in recruitment almost a decade now, and at the time there was a lot of talk around autonomous vehicles and driverless cars and how that was going to change the world and the benefits that would come with that. I ended up kind of working on a client that was actually just around the corner, a company called at the time they were called the Transport Systems Catapult. They're now called the Connected Places Catapult, and they're there to facilitate innovation within mobility. So I did a huge amount of work with those guys, and that's where the love started to come. And I thought, you know what, this really interests me. And as the world of kind of autonomous vehicles went into more of the world of decarbonization of transportation and how do we move people and goods more smartly and more efficiently, i.e. the world of mobility as a service and different mobility methods, I just got addicted and I loved it because I think it was something that you could see a change happening immediately. We use our vehicles every single day. And whilst decarbonisation on the whole, you know, whether it's your home or your businesses or wherever it is, for example, you know, you don't look at the boiler that's in your cupboard, okay? But you do look at the car that's on your drive. And I think that for me, seeing that direct change happening was something that I wanted to be part of. And it just spiraled from there, really. And what I found was that there was a community very, very quickly of a lot of dedicated people looking to change. And I just wanted to be part of that group. And I think, you know, if I think about the relationship I got with you guys and with the clients that we've got in the industry, real game changers, leaders, influencers in what they do, you need those sorts of people to create change. And passion really, really is vitally important. And I was like, I've got the same passion as you guys. So I want to be part of it. How can I be part of it? Because really at the time recruitment, you know, working for an IT tech business back in the day, you were placing software developers, not into clean tech companies, for example. And I just found this love that all I wanted to do was work with companies that were doing a positive or having a positive impact on the planet. So that's kind of where it all started, really. As you know, and a lot of people forget this, you know, yes, we do a lot of work within the world of EV charging and e-mobility, but we do a hell of a lot more. We've actually got three strands to our business. So we have our future mobility arm, which is everything from EV charging, mobility as a service, different transport modes that are all to do with the movement of people and goods in a more smart, efficient way. We've also got our renewable arms, which is everything from solar, wind, biomass, battery storage, so on and so forth. And then we've got our sustainability arm, which is everything around carbon markets, so carbon accounting, carbon credits, but also placing ESG professionals into finance companies, into packaging companies, so on and so forth. So it's very varied now because we've tried to really open it up and diversify our portfolio because it does all link together. And you know, I'm sure you guys know that, and anyone else listening to this podcast is we need to change everything. It's all to work cohesively in order for change.
Very and true. It's not only in the UK that you do that, is it? I mean, you've seen rapid growth in your UK operation, but you've now also stepped across the pond.
Yes. So going back historically, all I did was UK. That's all I knew. And then we started really branching out into the European and Nordic markets, which was a great success. But you're absolutely right. More recently, we've been really hitting the North American market, and we're really starting to have a lot of success at the moment. And our plans moving forward, certainly over the next 18 months, is one, to increase our footprint across our European markets, but really our major focus is to push our efforts into the North American market. And I think kind of one thing we're really proud of, that what we've created, is when I set up the company, I wanted to become part of the industry, not just be a recruiter selling into it. Mm. And I feel like we've achieved that. You know, when we go to conferences, it's no more kind of like, oh, hi, I'm Stuart Middleton. This is who we are. It's fist pumps. It's high fives. It's cuddles. And that for me means we're kind of, we solidified ourselves as being part of the industry. And that comes from, I think, the way that we hold ourselves, the way that we operate. We're very proud. We don't want to be just like the normal recruitment agency. Okay. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be seen as a normal recruitment agency. Like you said, Paul, at the start, there is a stigma around recruiters. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I used to be almost embarrassed when I first started. I used to be embarrassed about telling people, "Oh, I'm a recruiter." But I think that we, you know, what we're trying to do is internally is to create a center of excellence for our staff. What do we mean by that? We mean we want to create legends within the industry. We want every single person who works within this company to be recognized as an expert in their field. So, you know, we're not just trying to work with everybody out there, okay? The companies that we work with have to share the same values as we do. We don't want to be held at arm's length from a company. We want to be adding value more than just putting bums on seats to companies. Hmm. So we want to influence decisions. We want to contribute on the decision making. We want to add value in wherever we can do, and I think we've achieved that so far. But what's really important to us now is, yes, we want to increase our geographic regions, but I could go out and hire 10 people tomorrow if we wanted to, but for me, finding the right people for the organization is critical, because, you know, I think if we look at the professionalism and where you kind of go from the Marines, I used to look all around me and there wouldn't be a single person in the room that I wouldn't go on that battlefield with, whether I liked them or not. They, you know, professionally, okay, I trusted everything they did. So if I wasn't here, I know they'd show up, they'd do whatever they needed to do, and they've got my back. The guys I've got in the business right now, I know I have that team, okay? And if, you know, for anyone who wants to join us, we have to make sure they hold them similar values, because we can, if we've got this reputation that we like to think is great out in the industry, it can be shattered in an instant with the wrong person. So that's why we're taking baby steps. But we punch well above our weight, and I'm proud of that.
Considering the weight as well.
Exactly.
I was going to say, that's the biggest baby I ever saw. I think you summed it up. I mean, what I think we as EV Cafe have fallen in love with, and genuinely, we love you guys, and you, your brother, the rest of the team, those that we've met, instantly recognizable as Interval, as instantly recognizable that mindset. So what you've done, because, and again, coming back to that Marines background, that it's all about, you said, I'm not the fittest, you know, you have to be like in the top echelons of fitness, you have to be, but it's not about that. I had a piece of advice that was given to me to pass on to Jaden for somebody that had clearly been in the special forces for some time. He was out at that point, and he just said, it was one of those really spooky kind of people. He said, I'll find you on social media, but you won't find me. It was like, ooh, okay. But he said, you know, it's all mindset. That is where your battle is won and lost, if it's in your mind. And what you've done, it seems to me, is bring that mindset to your people. And I think the thing that really kind of linked us was that deep empathy you have for the human race. You know, that real care for your fellow man. And it's, you know, in recruitment, I think that is like, you know, other recruiters must look at you and think you've grown an extra head, because it's like, well, how can you care about people? You just move them through, but you do. Where did that come from? Where does that real care and passion come from for the human being?
Yeah, I think I've always been told, you know, treat people how you want to be treated. So I think that's always stuck in me. It was kind of always put in me by my dad. It was very much a case of, look, you know, you show up well, you act professionally, and you treat people how you want to be treated, and you treat people with respect, because respect is earned. It's not just given. And I think a lot of people tend to forget that these days, is that, you know, life is not fair. And you know, there's a big bad world out there, and I think sometimes you have to kind of remember that, you know, in order to get what you want, you have to be willing to kind of put yourself out there and work hard. Now, the empathy piece, I think that's just down to kind of I don't know the answer to that. It's just who I am. But, you know, we always try and build close relationships with everyone that we work with. I do feel very fortunate because people do come to us sometimes, and I've had it countless times where people have said, "Look, Stuart, I've been offered this opportunity, or I'm speaking to so and so. Do you think it's right for me?" And you know, I have to be honest. You know, in some cases, yes, absolutely, go for it. In some cases, I don't tell people no, but I just kind of. I want to share my kind of opinions on things, and it's not to turn people off at all, but it's more a case of, look, you know, I know you, you know, we're now almost kind of at friendship level, so I have to give you my opinions on it, and more often than not, you know, it's worked out in a positive way because people are then come back to us and say, thank you so much, I've dodged a bullet there, or thank you for where I am now. So, you know, I think it just comes down to just treat people with respect. Be open and honest. Be open to take criticism as well, and be genuine. Be genuine. You know, don't try and be someone you're not. I never have done. You know, what people see here is what I am. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I don't change for it. You know, I think back in the day when I initially left the armed forces, it's really hard because you've kind of gone from this world of structure, professionalism, to a world of you've got to think for yourself fully. Whilst thinking soldiers, it can be quite hard. I think there is a transition period, and for anyone leaving the armed forces, it is difficult. And I, for a few years, behaved how I felt that people wanted me to behave, which was, you know, straight laced, and you've got to be professional and all that kind of good stuff. But what I found was, as soon as I started being me, it just all suddenly became a lot easier. And you know, now I won't change for anybody, and you know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, like that. Amen is all I say.
Absolutely.
Success, my friend. What does that look like for you? Because you're a man clearly on a mission. You know, you've come in, you've changed the way that the industry operates, and you're setting the benchmark for how people find those challenges, how companies get the right people, and you're starting to grow internationally. What's the end game for you? What does success look like? Is it build this business and retire at 45 and go live on a beach somewhere? Or is it this inner drive to always deliver something and you'll be doing this until the day they nail you down in a box?
It's a good question, and I've been asked by people that in the past a lot. You know, what is in, and being truthful, I've never been able to give an answer. I don't know where, you know, people in business say you should have a 5-year plan or a 5-year goal, or you know, or an end goal, so to speak. I don't have an end goal. I think what do I want to create? Okay, I want to create a company and a group of individuals that are recognized as being leaders in what they do. So, if you are a client, you think of Interval. If you're a candidate, you think of Interval, because if you're a client, you're going to get top quality service. You're going to get the best of the best knowledge, the best recruiters. And if you've got from a candidate point of view, you've got a business here that you can trust, a business who isn't going to be just throw your CV around and hope it sticks somewhere. It's just not what we do. And it might be our downfall in respect of, you know, we may not. We might miss out on opportunities to make money in some cases because we're not that way inclined. But that's just the way we are, and we're not looking at other people saying, "Oh, we should be like you." We're being who we want to be, and we're not willing, and we're not going to change that at all. And I think that's if once you kind of are proud of that point and that element, that for me, success comes from purely ensuring that we are seen as experts in what we do and are respected. And you have to gain that respect, and sometimes that can take years, but we're on our journey.
Okay, so let me give you a military analogy. You tend to go out on operation, you have an objective, you achieve that objective, you move on to the next battle. This isn't about the war. This is about a succession of operations that you go on to deliver something concrete for your clients. That's the mindset you had when you did your Marines training and all the way through your operational career. And you've taken that into your business world now. You do it in a softer, gentler way and without a gun, but fundamentally, it's the same structured approach, isn't it, that you've got? It's about yeah. the next battle. Where's that coming from? And I have to be 100% all the time or I don't achieve my objective.
I think you're right, John. Yeah, I might have to take that myself. Thank you. But you're right. I think that it's very difficult for me to kind of look that far ahead and say, look, here's the exit plan because it's what we want to do. For me, I enjoy my job, and I think if you can enjoy your job, I don't want to leave it. I enjoy the people that I work with internally. I enjoy being part of the community that is being developed from this, and I enjoy helping people as well. So I can't see myself doing anything different anytime soon. And I think all we got to do is just keep trying to push this business to its full potential.
Absolutely.
So, Stuart, I want to pay you the highest compliment I can in many respects, because as I look at my son, who is about to embark on this journey, everything in me as a dad, because you've done tours of Afghanistan. We haven't gone there today in terms of being shot at and having to deal with the fallout of being in the theater of war and all of those kinds of those sorts of things. But imagine me as a dad now thinking, actually, my son could be into those situations. You guys were front and center of just every action, right? Right, let's get started. Who are we going to send? Of course, we're going to send the Marines. We're going to put those boys out front and center. That scares me as a dad, to think that my boy is going to be in that kind of situation. But on the flip side of that, I look at the man, Stuart Middleton, and I look at the empathy he has. And my son he's a very empathetic guy. You've met him, I know. But and he's passionate. He's determined. He makes his bed every day. He's not your average, kind of kid doing that. He's finishing his apprenticeship before he goes to the Marines. He's not, he's begun to kind of get into that dedication. If he comes out like you, mate, I'll be very proud of him.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
Because, you are bringing your training, your military excellence, that dogged determination, that brilliance, but also your humanity, your empathy, your passion, your care, your determination, your positive mindset, and bringing all of that and showing up without a mask. And that's been critical for, I think that's why we get on so well, is that we don't have masks. We can be open. And, for guys in a tough world, sometimes, to be able to cry, hug, walk alongside of each other, that's what makes a difference. So your business will be great. It can't, in my mind, it can't fail. And I feel very privileged to have got to know you and to seen Interval grow. And I'm looking forward to seeing Jaden in, 25 years time, I think, probably. It'll be about the same age as you, right? 40?
Yeah, 40, yeah. 35.
oh, sorry, a lot less than that. Must have been a hard paper round.
Yeah, it was.
But, Stuart, I feel very privileged to know you and to have met you. And it's very cool. We love the fact that we get to partner with you guys at the EV Cafe and Interval. You've been a very diligent, passionate sponsor of ours, both in that partnership, but also on the day-to-day basis. So we're very grateful. And, what would you say to someone listening to this? I think you said it early on, but I'd like you to kind of sum it up. But to people that are sort of aspiring in business, aspiring, to go into the future, what advice would you give them?
Be genuine, follow your passion. I think they're the two of the best things. Be yourself. Don't try and be anyone you're not. Be willing to work hard. Be willing to sometimes have to flex if you need to. I think sometimes working in recruitment, I speak to a lot of people who are always just looking to go on the up. They want more. And I try and kind of remind people that sometimes it's more than just about the money. It's about what you really, do you realize, jobs, our employment takes up all of our time. We spend more time with our work colleagues than we do with our family. So make it more than just about money sometimes. Whilst money these days, with everything that's happened around the world is equally important. But I think if you've got a passion for something, follow your passion. You'll get so much more enjoyment out of work if you can do that. The rest comes. Okay, the rest comes, and also don't accept anything second best. If you're unhappy, why are you unhappy? Can you change it? Be honest. Speak to people, and if you can't change it, then it's probably a time to move. But don't just jump ship without having conversations, because you'll be amazed by what can come just by opening up to people and being honest. Because we're also focused on a mission or on a pathway, that sometimes those things can be lost in translation, and sometimes people, managers, have to take a bit of a rein check themselves to look at are the people around me happy. And I think that sometimes we all need reminding. Okay, when we're in, anyone in a leadership role, the people who are underneath you, just keep an eye on them, but also be open to listen. And I think listening is probably one of the most understated skills in life.
Yeah.
You've got to listen to what people are actually saying. And sometimes saying nothing is also good. You don't always have to comment. Just listen.
Brilliant. Thank you. That is so helpful. And I think people can take that away and take that to the bank, actually. Yeah. Because that's a good way of living. John.
That final few words sits so nicely with how I was going to sum this up, because when I saw that this chat was going to happen, I thought, Stuart Middleton, Paul Kirby, John Curtis, three people who don't know what silence sounds like because we rabbit so much. This is going to go on for a very, very long time and will be brilliant, but none of us speaks in, three words if 1,000 will do. But what you've just said there about shut your gob and actually listen to people, two ears, one mouth, use them in that proportion, is so key. And that's what we all have. There have been times over the last 3 years that we've known each other where you and I have just picked the phone up and talked. And I've talked to you and offloaded, and you've talked to me and you've told me about stuff that's going on. And Paul, I know you and Stuart have that relationship too. We're there for each other, just like in the forces. We may not wear the uniform, but the brotherhood is there. It's strong. And I know that you share that with so many people in the industry, because we all value not just the business that you operate, but you, the man. So Stuart Middleton, hats off to you, my friend. Thank you.
Well, thank you both. Thank you. Really appreciate the kind words. Thank you.
Yeah, mate, it's our pleasure. Central to the community and just making that community happen is fantastic. So, Stuart, we've thoroughly enjoyed today. And people can connect with you on LinkedIn, right? So I think that's a... Yeah.
No, get lost.
You'll find me on LinkedIn. Anybody can reach out anytime. We'll always make time for you.
Absolutely. And I've always seen that many, many times. So reach out to Stuart at Interval. Also check him out on LinkedIn. And of course, I think we've got a link on our website, the EV Cafe. You can kind of get on there and go on to there. Do check out some of the other podcasts. Clearly, none of them are as good as this one. That's what we say at the end of everyone. But it's been a fantastic privilege to talk to a real character and leader in our industry, whether you meant to be or not. You really have been a great leader to us and to the industry around you. So, Stuart, hats off to you, mate. Thank you so much for your candidness today and just sharing the journey. It's been fantastic. Forward to seeing what Interval becomes globally. Could it be the biggest and the best? Of course it could. So until next time, everybody, please do check out the EV Cafe. Follow us on LinkedIn. Check out Stuart. John, Stuart, thanks for the conversation. What a fantastic day.
Cheers, buddy.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.